KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, salmon fishermen have their nets in the water on the Nooshiek, but in Southeast, the summer Chinook troll season is in doubt, and we meet the new voice of the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. All that, and Haines fishermen don't care if you paint dolphins on it. They just want a bigger harbor. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
Every summer, public radio station KDLG in Dillingham produces and airs the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. It started out weekly and then went to Saturdays and Sundays. Now, in an effort to keep the Bay's thousands of fishermen up to speed, it's being produced daily with a new host, Molly Dishner.
A lot of fishermen, maybe less so now, but historically haven't had data like phone service or anything on their boats, so the radio was the one way they could hear the numbers and decide where they wanted to go fish. So it's kind of important to that community that they do have a good chunk of information every night to make decisions.
And Dishner definitely has all the data. Escapements from here and there, openings, interviews with biologists, fishermen, and more. It's almost like an episode of Inside Baseball for fishermen. Dishner previously reported on fisheries with the Peninsula Clarion newspaper in Kenai and the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and so has experienced the excitement of sitting through week-long Board of Fish and North Pacific Council meetings. But she finds there's a whole different energy reporting from the epicenter of an active fishery.
On Sunday, when they announced the first West Side Nooshiek section opener at like 9 a.m., and by 9:30, like everyone in the harbor was up and moving and launching boats into the water, and it was like, oh, wow, everything just came alive, you know, in 30 minutes, basically, because they knew they got to fish.
And if she gets some time, Dishner said she'd like to catch a few salmon herself.
I do like eating salmon, and I like catching salmon. My goal is to get enough better at this that there's some time to go catch my own fish here eventually before the salmon runs stop.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is a half hour long and runs weekdays at 6:30 p.m., repeating at 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. for those fishermen on wheel watch. On weekends, it's on at 1:30 in the afternoon. You can tune in online at kdlg.org, or if you're in the Bay, 6:70 a.m. Speaking of Bristol Bay, set netters in the Nooshiek section had their first opportunity to put their nets in the water on Sunday night. The aforementioned Molly Dishner was on the scene and has more.
The cork lines looked a little steady Sunday evening. About a half hour into the opener, D. Barker was getting ice and water at the fishing vessel Rebel, a Peter Pan tender.
Henry pays us a little bit more for it. It's well worth the trouble. We change how we do the insulated totes. Cold water, and then slush ice, and keeping them separated from the ice with the brailers. It's amazing how much more it's increased the quality of the fish. And normally it's paid off every year 5 or 10 cents a pound more. But looks like we're taking a back seat to price this year.
Barker says he had a few fish in his two nets when he ran over to the tender. He says he won't miss an opener if he can help it, but he doesn't know how many fish he'll catch this summer.
I know God pretty well, but I don't know him well enough that he tells me what the fishing's going to be. And I'm sure that he's the only one that really knows.
So he got a little extra ice just in case.
Want all that filled up? All right.
Probably about 4 buckets.
4 buckets?
Prior to coming to the Nooshiek, tender operator Chris Straub says the Rebel was over in Igooshiek buying fish.
We came from Kodiak, and we went and bought some fish over in Igooshiek earlier.
How are the catches over there?
You know, it seems like it's starting to pick up a little bit, and bigger fish, so that's exciting.
A few sites upriver, Mike Davis thought conditions were right for fish to hit the beach, but he wasn't seeing them either.
I don't know. I'm a little disappointed, to be honest with you, because I figured with the wind and the fact that there hasn't been any nets out there that we should have been, they should have been hitting, and they're not. So either there was a wave that went up and nothing behind it, or they're going to come in on the next tide.
Will you be here for that next tide?
Of course, yeah. We'll
the set netters went back out for a second opening Monday morning at 5:30 a.m., and the drifters were on their heels at 10 a.m. Initial reports were that the fishing was still a little slow. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
There's less than a week to go before the traditional start of the summer king salmon troll season, but fishermen in Southeast don't yet know how many kings they'll be allowed to catch. Representatives on the Pacific Salmon Commission are deadlocked. They can't agree on how many king salmon are out there, and that has put this year's king salmon season in jeopardy. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
Normally, the King Salmon Abundance Index is released in early April. That number determines how many Chinook will be available for commercial and sport fishermen in Southeast Alaska, and how many fish must be allowed to pass by on their way to rivers in British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. But here we are, with just days to go until the summer troll season starts, and that number isn't out, which means that fishermen and processors and fishery managers don't know what kind of a summer to plan for. The problem is at the Pacific Salmon Commission, which implements the U.S.-Canada Pacific Salmon Treaty. Each year, representatives from Alaska, Canada, Washington, and Oregon have to agree on an estimate of the returning king salmon population. And right now, they don't agree. 2014 was a record year for king salmon in Southeast, but when the abundance index was first calculated this year, it had dropped by 77%, according to Charlie Swanton, the Deputy Commissioner of Fish and Game and Alaska's representative on the Pacific Salmon Commission. Swanton says Alaska just doesn't agree with that number.
When you have a strong brood year, it doesn't drop off the cliff, okay?
Last year's quota for Southeast was almost 440,000 king salmon. That's the highest since the current management system went into effect in 1999. But under the numbers produced by the model this year, there would have been about 240,000 king salmon available for fishermen. That's about half as many. Swanton says it's always possible that something drastic happened to the population in the intervening year, but there's evidence, including from a strong winter troll season, that indicates otherwise.
Everything that we've seen from the return to the Columbia River last year and the Columbia River returns so far this year are all pointing towards another year of very strong abundance.
And Southeast fishermen worry that with the lower quota, they might be forced to watch those fish swim by, losing out on millions of dollars. For Washington and Oregon, the top priority is making sure there are enough fish returning to honor their obligations under treaties with local tribes and under the Endangered Species Act, Swanton says. The rest is then parceled out among commercial and recreational fisheries along the West Coast. Usually, when the committee that generates the abundance index disagrees, it's called the Chinook Technical Committee, the issue is kicked up to the commissioners. And that's where it sits now. But Swanton says there's no agreement yet on how to manage the fishery without an abundance index.
So what I've asked the Southern commissioners is, what do you think we should do? I mean, given that we don't have any guidance, given that the commission did not offer any alternative options for Alaska in configuring our fisheries, what should we do?
KCAW left messages for the three voting commissioners from Washington and Oregon who didn't respond by press time. Given all this, I asked the question on many local minds. Can Southeast expect to go fishing for king salmon this summer?
I am hopeful that that will be the case, yes.
But it's not for sure right now.
Nothing's for sure right now, but I'm very, very optimistic that we will find a way through this impasse at this point in time and that we can get folks doing what they do this time of the year, which is make a living and catch king salmon.
And fishermen across Southeast are hoping for the same thing. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvests for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A couple dozen Haines area residents gathered in a citizen-organized town hall last week to talk about the town's small boat harbor expansion project. Earlier this spring, a petition with 92 signatures that asked for a forum on the harbor didn't motivate the Haines Borough Assembly to organize one. So resident Joe Parnell put together the town hall meeting himself. KHNS's Emily Files reports.
Much of the conversation centered around aesthetics versus functionality. Here's Joe Parnell.
This is going to be a visual nightmare out here for everybody, and it's going to cost a lot of money. That's going to come from Haynesboro.
An expanded parking lot is the first part of the design that sparked fears about degrading the waterfront's scenic value. Now, a planned steel wave barrier is causing concern. Here's Gershon Cohen.
There are many, many communities around the country that, frankly, rue the day that they ruined the aesthetics of their waterfront.
Cohen said all the pictures he's seen of the harbor design are bird's eye view, and he would like to see a drawing that shows what the expansion would look like from street level. Don Turner is on the Port and Harbor Advisory Committee. He said the breakwater won't be pretty.
It's not going to be becoming. It is going to be a big steel wall out there. That's all there is to it. There's no other way around it, unless somebody goes out there and paints dolphins and stuff on it.
But Turner challenged some of the people at the meeting, saying this process has been happening for a long time. He said there have been many opportunities for public input.
It wasn't until after the fact, basically, the people come out of the woodwork and said, "Oh my God, what are you doing?" You know, and that irritates me, because there's been lots of time for people, if they've been paying attention at all, to look at this.
One person asked Borough Manager Dave Sosa whether the harbor project could be slowed down to allow the public more time to give feedback. A couple fishermen spoke out against that suggestion. Here's Will, Prissy, and Daro.
We need it's a working harbor. It's not a yacht marina. I mean, like what Don said, it might not be pretty, but go down there today. Every parking spot was full. I mean, I could really care less if there's dolphins on the thing. I want a bigger harbor so that all the fishermen in this town can have a place to work on their boats.
Artist and business owner Tresham Gregg said if the aesthetic of the harbor is degraded, it could hurt Haynes' tourism industry. Aside from visual concerns, Parnell questioned how the borough would afford future phases and maintenance of the project. A state bond of $19 million will pay for the expanded breakwater, dredging, and parking lot, but future improvements like additional slips and a drive-down dock are not yet funded.
And I personally think that the legislators are going to say, well, Haynes got their bite of the apple. They got their $19 million once before, and all the other towns are going to line up before us and say, you know, why do you guys even need, or, you know, you got your $19 million before, and that's a pretty big stretch to say we're just going to get another $10 million.
People's concerns were clear at the meeting. What wasn't clear is if anything will come of it. Some said they would reach out to elected representatives about their worries. Making any changes to the project or the timeline of the project is up to the Borough Assembly. In Haynes, I'm Emily Files.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KDLG's Molly Dishner in Dillingham, KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, and KHNS's Emily Files in Haynes. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.